The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Okay, teachers, why do we teach? Do you teach for a reason? In 1969, a young, shy girl entered a new school. She was shy, so she did her best not to draw any attention to herself. She worked really hard, but C's and B's were about all she could accomplish. One day the teacher pulled her aside and said, "You're probably not used to hearing this type of comment, but you're a good student. I'm happy you're in my classroom." That remark planted a seed in that young girl, and she became a teacher so she could touch the lives of others. Is that why we teach? So we can touch the lives of others, make disciples of Christ. If you've taught long, you probably have some stories. I remember one Sunday, a young lady stopped me and said, "You made a difference in my life." Well, it really wasn't me, but I let God use me. As teachers, we need to open ourselves to the Holy Spirit. That's why we teach, though, to affect those lives. Those are the paychecks. Monetary reimbursement doesn't reach that. So I want to encourage you, keep on. So, what does a classroom look like in which we can nurture children and mature young adults? I think it probably looks like a happy scene. Teacher interacting with the students, students responding to the teacher, teacher helping them with their class, learning to think. Teachers seldom get irritated. I think all that's a pretty picture, and we as teachers dream of that. That's what we want. So how do we achieve that? How do we achieve that classroom where that interaction between teacher and student creates that environment? It takes relationship to start with. But first, I want to look at some big picture things. The teacher's attitude definitely affects the students. How you handle frustrations, work through things, your attitude toward education, these all affect the classroom. When you start your class at the beginning of the year, there's typically either a response to you or a reaction. As teachers, we want to walk into that classroom and have a response. That means they're responding to you. There's a relationship starting. I'm afraid sometimes it's a reaction, though. There's kind of a little conflict, a little edge in the air. But these things are part of a classroom and getting it off the ground. The other aspect of a classroom is a teacher's personality. Some teachers are very structured. And I'm sure you've seen them. Their classrooms are very orderly. Students in their desk. Everything's in its place. She tells them to line up for break. They march up through the hall like little ducks right in a straight row. It's perfect order. That's the dream classroom, is it? I think maybe that's what we think is the dream classroom. But in my years of teaching, about half of them as principal, I've been into quite a few classrooms. And it's not always that type of structure. You can come into the classroom where the students are a little more casual, they talk a little more, they're not quite as orderly. Is that classroom wrong and the other one right? I don't think so. I think the same level of academics can be reached in every one of those classrooms. It's just a reflection of the teacher's personality. So teachers, if you can't quite reach that rigid, what looks like the perfect classroom, don't give up on the one you've got. I will have to admit that I may be a little lenient towards the casual classroom because that's me. In fact, my wife says I'm too lenient. I tell her I like to let the horses gallop once in a while. The key is who's in control. When I say whoa, do the horses stop? You know, some teachers are scared to say whoa. They're afraid the horses won't stop for them. I challenge you, teachers, you do need to say whoa if you're that type person. Whoa, it's time for math, time for reading. They kick in, they learn. Just as well as this rigid classroom, I think. There's room for both. But your personality will be reflected in your classroom. That's natural, it's normal. Don't try to strain the classroom to match something ideal. Flow with yourself, but be in control. Another thing to create this environment is enthusiasm. Your students are going to be no more enthused about what you're teaching than you are. There may be the child here and there that likes history or science that will have more enthusiasm than the teacher, but I think only for a while. Eventually, you, the teacher, set the level of excitement or whatever about the classroom. Now, I've taught 25 years. That means I've taught some subjects 15, 16 times, same book. Am I enthused the 15th and 16th times I was the first and second? I'm not. In here, I'm not. When I walk in that classroom, I got to act. Teaching is acting. Is that right? You need to act. Your students are not going to achieve a higher level of enthusiasm, and I think enthusiasm translates into learning. Teaching is acting, more than one way. So those are some of the big picture things, and setting the theme, the tone, for that classroom to nurture and mature. So what does it take to create good relationships? Does it require unconditional respect of your children or students? Does it require consistent discipline? Does it require consequences for behavior, significant consequences for behavior? No one of those, and I don't think all three together, create the environment that we need to nurture and mature children. It takes relationship. It takes relationship. Good relationships require a personal connection with your students. Does that mean that the teacher is a friend of her student? I'm sure you've all heard that no, the teacher cannot be the friend of her student. There needs to be you're the teacher, they're the student. You need to maintain that. They'll say you cannot be the friend of your student. And you hear sometimes that you're not supposed to smile until Thanksgiving. Is that right? You Canadians got a easy streak. Y'all can start smiling. I got to wait till November the 24th before I can start smiling. I think I'll come to Canada and start teaching. I can't see teachers achieving what we've just talked about if your students are enemies, or even if you're just neutral. Relationship requires involvement. So teachers, I'm saying you do need to be the friend of your student. But let's look at relationship. The term itself means involvement, right? Relationships means involvement. The deciding factor is what type of friend are we talking about. I've got two dictionary definitions here. One says it's a person attached to another by feelings of affection. The second one is attached to another by personal regard. It's fairly simple, I think, to see which one we as teachers are striving for. But I want to point out something. B, the one that talks about personal regard, it says personal regard. It's not an impersonal regard for one another. It's a personal regard. It's an interaction that has substance to it. I feel that the majority of a teacher's time should be spent building relationships with their students. You can start with rigid discipline. And teachers often do that because they're afraid that they'll lose control of their classroom. And it is possible to scare your children into good behavior. But it's very stressful. It's hard work. It comes to the point where the child is trying to see what they can get by with, and you, the teacher, are trying to catch them. Because that's how you keep order, by disciplining misbehavior. And you've got conflict in the classroom. You've got a battle between you and the student. That's what happens if discipline is your goal. Now, I want to make one thing very clear. I'm not against discipline. Students have a carnal nature. There needs to be discipline. I use the example of a rule that we have in our school that you're supposed to be quiet in the hall, because if you're talking, interacting in a way that makes noise, you're going to interfere with the classes going on. Okay, that's a very simple rule. Probably first graders can understand the reason for it, right? How long does that rule stay in place if there's no discipline? Not very long, right? I would really be challenged to think if it lasts very long if that rule was applied to you all as adults. Sometimes in the school setting, I almost think the adults are the first ones to break the rule. We as adults struggle with the same thing. Would you abide by the traffic laws if you weren't afraid you'd get caught? Discipline is necessary. Yes, discipline is necessary. Consequences cause them to think. Consequences give strength to your desires as a teacher. So the first weeks of teaching in a school year, either you are training the students to what you want, or they are training you to accept where they want the boundary. Somebody's getting trained. It's you or the students. Teachers, discipline is necessary. I don't want to pass that off as not. However, remember what I said. Our focus is relationship. That's the key. Build relationship. So what is the proper interaction for creating teacher-student relationships? I'd like to first look at what we often hear of in the school setting is that there needs to be unconditional respect for authority. This is a biblical command. 1 Peter 2, 17 and 18 says, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king, servants be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. It is biblical to have respect for those over us. Unconditional, whether they deserve it or not. That needs to be in place. However, I'd like to pause here a minute and put this in perspective of a classroom where we're focusing on relationship. There's a difference between respect for a person's authority and respect for the person. I was once pulled over by a policeman. And he was a pretty tall guy, and he stood outside the window of my car and treated me like a child. I fully respected his authority. There wasn't any question. I respected that. I said, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But my respect for him as a person was about zero. So teachers, I'm going to throw a big challenge out there. You have to earn the respect of your children, your students, if you want relationship. You have to be respectable. You have to treat them with respect. That's a challenge for any of us. It makes me shake sometimes when I think I have to be that example for teenagers, that they'll look to me with respect. One area is don't abuse your teacher privilege. You have a privilege. You can come into the classroom a couple minutes late. Our school says no cell phones. You as a teacher, you can take privilege, bring your cell phone. However, if you take that privilege, teacher privilege, too far, it's going to show kind of a disdain for what you expect out of the student. You got to practice what you preach. It kind of boils down to that. Practice what you preach. Because of our cell phone rule, I would always keep my phone in the office. I work for CLP, and so periodically I would have to check for messages. I wanted to show the student that I knew that they had this rule to abide by it, and as far as I could, I as a teacher was going to also. However, that rule has changed, I'll have to admit. The school board has asked that I wear or tap my cell phone at all times in case of emergency. But I just want to give an example of what you expect out of your students. Set the same goal pretty much for yourself. That's just one example of earning respect. And that challenge is there. If we want respect, if we want relationship, we will have to be respectable. So how do we do that? One simple phrase: love the child. Simple phrase, but our human nature gets in the way, doesn't it? It's too easy to love one that does everything right, makes good grades, and the one that's a behavior problem or struggles in the class, to love that person at the same level. But we must. You can try to fake it, but students will pick up on it. They will pick up on those attempts to love them, those attempts to cover up ill feelings. But I'm not going to leave you empty-handed. We as Christians have a source to help us love those. Those that are the hardest to love need it the most. And so we look to God. We look to be filled with the Spirit. We have to do that. Our human nature gets in the way. But that is the bottom line in developing relationship with students, that you love them. It must be conveyed in the context of personal regard, because there's a little caution here. That's a respect for the person. Some teachers, in attempting to develop the relationship, become the buddy. You know what I mean by that? You know, that warning I said earlier about having to have, you can't be the friend of your teacher. This is the type of friend they're actually talking about. You can't be that type of friend. They can't be your buddy. That prevents you from doing the tough love, of carrying out the discipline I talked about earlier. That needs to be in place. Do we need to be consistent? That's commonly given as a reason for students' classroom behavior to break down. Teacher wasn't consistent. There's a consistency in which same punishment for the same offense. The one that really challenges us is child to child being consistent. It challenges us to be the one that's always behaving well, and they slip up one day, and just a little hard to give the same discipline to that student that you do to the one that's always in trouble. But there's a paradox involved there too. I've had students accuse me of picking on them. They're the ones that are always getting called down. And so they're just picking on me. Why didn't you discipline this one over here? And in some of those cases, I find myself backing off and not disciplining them as much as I should have. That's just kind of a paradox that happens in the classroom sometimes. Consistency is a challenge. But I think, I put it out like this: if your control of the classroom depends on letter of the law obedience, then you need to have letter of the law consistency. But if you have relationship, then I think students will understand that teachers are human And if we admit we messed up, they'll accept that. They're not going to be holding us to the letter of the law if we have a relationship. Consistency is not near the issue. Not this letter of the law of consistency. If you have a relationship with your students. One person told me after this, I had given this presentation, that discipline in the context, or discipline without relationship, creates rebellion. If you discipline without relationship, you'll get rebellion. I've toned that down a little in my notes, that discipline without relation creates conflict. But I think there are situations where it does actually breed rebellion against us as teachers. So the challenge then, and what I'm actually saying here, is if you develop relationship, then you can somewhat relax with the rigidity of your consistency. We're looking at obedience to the spirit of the law and not the letter of the law in these cases. All right, how do we get this relationship? How do you build student relationships? What's our goal? Communicate on a personal level, right? That means we communicate about things that are not academic all the time. So you learn about the child. If you move into a new setting, you may have to do a little background work, find out their siblings, what their parents do, their likes and their dislikes. What we need to do is create some connection, some common denominator to relate to that child in a way that's personal. And I was challenged by one of the groups that what I was talking about works only in high school. But I thought about it, I said no. The subject matter changes. But if it's a first or second grader, you can communicate about the little puppy they got or the kitty they got, something their family has done. That avenue for personal connection. In high school, it might be the big buck they missed, the job potential they've got. The subject matter changes, but to create that personal connection, you need that common denominator. It's just the subject matter is what varies. So make an effort to communicate. Also challenge us as teachers to communicate positives. Some students, we have to search for those. And sometimes they're fairly vague or maybe not really positive, but we make them positive because we want to communicate to a student that we care. Personal communication is essential to good relationships. We also need to make the effort to treat all, or that we accomplish that with all students. Some students, it happens naturally, right? They're just naturally communicators, no problem. We as teachers need to come into the classroom and look at the group and say, there's a student I haven't connected with lately. And during the day, make opportunity to do that. Some personal comment, some personal interaction. Our focus needs to be relationship. If we're going to create what I'm talking about earlier, that environment in which nurturing and maturing can occur, where we can be effective. Sometimes this relationship does break down. And I think sometimes it plays out first in maybe misbehavior. A child is typically well-behaved, and you start noticing them talking to their partner beside them a little more than they usually do, coming a little later for class, being slow. Our natural reaction to that is maybe to increase some or put some punishment on it, discipline, or increase punishment, get their attention. I'd like for us to back off of that from that and say, okay, did I do something to offend this child that they don't respect me anymore? Has their respect broken down because of something I said or did? Look at that angle before you just jump on the punishment. In high school, If I see that happening, and it's principal, I'll take them to the principal's office, and we'll sit there and we'll talk. And I'll call attention to it. I'll say, you know, it seems like you've had a little trouble staying quiet in class, interfering with the woman beside of you, or you've been late here for a couple of days. What's going on? We'll just dialogue. I don't expect to come out with some profound reason they're misbehaving. But because I have taken the time to talk to them, relate to them on a personal level, if there was something there, it'll pass away. I've treated them as somebody I care for. And sometimes it does come out that maybe I've made a comment. But typically, just the fact of sitting down and talk with them. If it's a second grader, sit down beside them at lunch. Talk about the kitty. Let them know you care about them. Don't automatically respond to behavior problems with more punishment. And any time you discipline a child, that potential's there that they're going to think, I've upset the teacher. I have a reputation, good or bad. My co-teacher says he wished he had it. He said, when Mr. Norwood calls you down, you know it. When I have misbehavior, I want them to know that they have misbehaved. This is another time you act sometimes. You make an impact. Tone of voice, emotion, stop the class. But when you've done that, you've embarrassed them. So, you've kind of tarnished the relationship, haven't you? Sometime during the day, I will try to relate with that student on a personal level. Talk about something. I want them to know that discipline was for their behavior, not them. I still care about them. I still love them. Rebuild that relationship. Discipline needs to be in place. So when behavior breaks down, discipline the behavior. And your discipline must match the offense. We need to keep things in line. But rebuild that relationship. But that discipline is probably shaken a little bit. All right, relationships are the key, I think, to a good year. Just a summary here. Discipline by the law becomes a battleground. Discipline in the context of relationship makes structure a team effort. They want to please the teacher. Their misbehavior becomes innocent mistakes. It's not an intentional trying to undermine the teacher. I've been mainly dealing with behavior now, up till now, but I'd like to switch to academics because academics are also affected by relationships. Slow students are a big challenge, aren't they? Slow students can be a frustration. They affect the class and they affect me as a teacher. And sometimes these students are lazy, but sometimes they cannot help it. That's where the challenge comes in. I had a situation a number of years ago. There was a student. I can't remember the grade level. I'm going to think fourth, fifth. And every once in a while, this student would pull a 90 or 95, and then he'd drop back down to barely passing. The teacher's read on this was that student's lazy. If he would try, he could do 90s all the time. So we decided to have the student evaluated. We were getting conflicting things here. The evaluator had a conversation with her about what was going on, these high peaks and then dropping down. And what she told me has given me a better understanding of why that can happen. She said that student gave 100% for that period and got that high score. But she said that typically people don't give 100%. Even the student that makes 100% is not giving 100% of their energy to get there. Your intelligent students can do it without working that hard. But for that challenged student, occasionally they can put all that effort in there and get up there on that higher level. But we're being unrealistic to expect that ongoing. And so I don't know if you've seen that situation or not, where occasionally a student will peak, and you'll think if they would just study, they could do this all the time. So we have some students who are lazy and some students that are challenged. The issue is discerning the difference, whether it is being lazy or whether it is a lack of ability. I think this can have a real tendency to break down relationship in a classroom more than just with that student. So I'd like to challenge us to look at that child. We want every child to achieve to the best of their ability. That's our goal. But everybody's best is not 100%. Sometimes it's 80, sometimes 85. We want them to achieve that. The key is discerning if we are reaching that level. I don't have the time to go into discerning that. But if you're in a situation where a student is getting stressed, I'd say back off. Get them comfortable with where they are in their learning. I had a teacher one time that was determined that she was the one that was going to turn a student around. She thought all the teachers before had just been copping out, letting the student loaf. She was determined that she was going to be the teacher that made this student a good child, made good grades. That young man's mother came to me with tears in her eyes. She was about ready to pull her student out of school. It was so stressful. Just this continual homework and the teacher just continually focusing on this child to study. And so we had to discuss it with the teacher and say, whoa, let's don't be unrealistic. This child has a certain ability. Let's try to find that. They'll learn more. I'm pretty confident. I can't prove this, but I'm pretty confident they'll learn more if you're teaching them at their level of ability than if you stress them too hard, you overwhelm them, and their retention is very little. So the challenge is finding that level. And you may have to, if you've got a situation that's built to a kind of a climax, you might have to back way down and bring it up. Get confidence, because that's the next thing I want to say. As teachers, develop a relationship and try to build confidence in the student. I had an algebra student that was struggling. So I had her come up to the front of the class. We had a table there in front of the desk, and occasionally I would bring a group up to discuss something. But I had her come up there, and we started working algebra problems. And she started breaking them down and seeing step by step, and you could just see that light bulb coming on. She started building confidence. Coming up to that table where I could work with her one-on-one, she also admitted that in years past she was afraid to ask questions. That's another thing that relationship can help. Make the student comfortable asking that question. I don't understand this. So you start at a level and build that confidence. Just a little sideline, that table, I had some other students, eventually some of those come up and become known as the dumb table. But they didn't mind sitting there because they were starting to learn, they were starting to build confidence. So just thinking they can, help them get that first step and then build. Try to gain to that level where they are able. Another situation, I had two boys. They were always challenging me in discussions. They were always coming in with their viewpoint to undermine mine. They called it logic. I said, it seems like it's illogical thinking to me. But anyway, we come to geometry. I don't know if any of you have had experience with geometry or not, but it's a course in logic. So starting that year, I said, young men, with your all's logic, y'all should do really good in this class. They did. They thought, you know, you said you have logic. They thought they wanted to prove they had logic. They did good. Maybe I tricked them. I don't know, but it worked. So thinking you can't causes a mental block that sometimes they don't even try. They give up too easy. Negative thinking is a detriment to gaining confidence that I can do it and achieving. Good relationships can help academics because it creates environment where the teacher can interact and they will ask questions. And it just creates a good attitude towards the whole thing of learning. So relationships aren't just focused for behavior. They're also part of academics. Another little sad thing I would like to bring in here is a situation where you have a class and you have eight whizzes and one challenged student. And you explain something and these eight over here get it and run, and this one over here is just totally lost. That's a struggle for us as teachers. We need to understand that child's not trying to cause us trouble. They just don't understand. And that's the reason I've kind of given you the scenario of this learning disability. Take that child where they are and try to build confidence. We've got to watch that frustration, though. That's a real battle. But the gifted can cause us to express frustration when we're in the presence of the other students. I'm just throwing this out of the challenge. I don't have some magic formula to prevent that frustration, but just a caution. Because we just think, well, why can't they get it? He's got it. Be careful that you don't take that and take that frustration out on the child. Now, there is the problem child. This is just a particular scenario here that maybe you've had in your school. The child that goes through the school and they have a reputation. They have poor behavior, low academics. And over the years, there's this dynamic has occurred in which teachers and parents are frustrated. They've tried everything in the book. And this child's coming into your classroom, what are you going to do? We may be tempted to set our radar to catch them at every little turn or give them a little extra push to do better. Resist that and build relationship first. Build relationship first. You know, there are children that come from homes that do have three strikes against them. And they can come into our classrooms and we can wonder, what can I do? I think it's possible for a teacher to be the one that provides the stability and the love that can turn that student around. Don't give up on the child that has this reputation or comes from the home that you think has no chance here. You as a teacher have opportunity to develop a relationship where you can provide the love and the boundaries and the stability that young person can achieve higher. I started this session with a little story of the girl that was inspired. I read that story, and nowhere does it say that the teacher knew that she had that impact. And I don't think that the girl knew at the time the impact that statement was going to make on her life. Teachers, we don't know the impact we are having. We don't know what seeds we're planting that God can use. But I want to encourage you to keep in there. Open yourself to the Holy Spirit. Love your students. Leave the rest to God. He will give the increase.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.